now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We are live from Studio B after a couple of weeks off. We're back. It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX, the Voice of St. Louis. I'm Scott Jagow, and I'm happy to be joined by two new experts who are going to answer your questions today. We'll be taking your phone calls for the next 2 hours. I want to say hello to Paul Horstman, who grew up in St. Louis County, went to Parkway North High School, graduated with a BS degree from Missouri State, started Horstman Brothers with your brother Phil in 1988, 36 years in business, providing landscape services to the St. Louis area. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. And Jeff Kendall joined the Horstman Brothers team in 2001. 42 years of experience in the horticultural industry. Responsibilities include landscape design, estimating sales, project management. He's the account rep for more than 280 landscape maintenance and turf care clients. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here. Looking forward to this.
280?
Yeah.
That's a lot of clients.
It is. We're a full-service company, and we've done a good job at, you know, maintaining our client base, so it's easy to grow it over a 23-year stretch.
And are those mainly residential homes?
Yes, sir. We do a mix of residential and commercial. I will say my base is definitely slanted more to the residential side, but we do both. So all over town.
And Paul, tell me a little bit about your background, how you got into this business.
Well, back in the day, my brother and I, we were cutting grass and taking care of lawns, and then we both ended up working on the grounds crew at Belrive Country Club under Lee Redman, and kind of learned about turf and turf care. And from there, I took a job being a personal gardener for a man in Ladue. I took care of his 13-acre estate, and he had his own golf course, private golf
green. His own golf course?
Yeah. He had 10,000 square foot golf green, three tees, and so you could play a red, white, and blue ball from three tees, so it played like a 9-hole golf course.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
And so from there, we just learned people in the business, and the business continued to grow, and then I had to quit my job and do it full time.
You had to. Well, yeah. That's good. I mean, that's what is supposed to happen, right?
Right, right.
So tell me some of the basics of turf care. I mean, what are some of the things people need to know when they're, because a lot of people have yards, either small ones or big ones. So what are some of the basics?
Well, the basics
instill?
Would be the cultural care. So mowing, watering, and feeding. And so the most important thing is probably mowing. How often do you mow? Are your blades sharp? And how high do you mow? And then depending on the type of grass you have in your yard, whether it's a cool season grass or a warm season grass.
And how about right now? Sorry, did you want to jump in?
No, like Paul was saying, mowing certainly is important, as is especially this time of year, getting into hot weather, moving back in, you know, proper hydration of the turf is key as well, whether you have a in-ground system or you need to do it manually. But both warm season and cool season grasses need water when it's hot and dry.
So now, when it's this hot, when it's 100 for 3 days in a row, are there any special considerations?
Well, like Jeff said, water, because the plant is 80% water. So basically you're growing water. Water early in the morning, it's very important to water early, and the dew that forms on the leaf, that's a very concentrated liquid, and you want to dilute that. You want to get that off the leaf blade, so when the sun pops up, you know, your plant can dry and that concentrated material is gone. So it's important to water early in the morning.
Is there also a balance to be had, you know, because sometimes we have drought conditions, some moderate, sometimes severe. is there a balance to be had between using enough water and using too much water where we're in trouble, you know?
Absolutely. You know, if we're if things are really wet out there, you know, yeah, remember to turn off the sprinkler and let it dry out a little bit. You know, the grass really performs well if it's watered. You know, a lot of times 1.5 inches a week is more than enough. Also, mowing height is key. You know, in the dry weather, I would recommend that people try to let the grass grow in between cuts. You know, if it doesn't look like it grew much, maybe just give it a rest and leave it alone. You know, is really best for the plant.
And county water, your water bill is something to consider. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a point of diminishing returns, and so some of these people, they have huge irrigation systems in these big yards, and all of a sudden they get an $1,100 water bill.
Wow.
And it's like, my grass still isn't green. And so, you know, you need to be real careful there.
So there is such a thing as overwatering.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty expensive. I suppose if you have all that land and you have a huge home, you probably can afford it, but you still don't want those bills to add up. You
know, yeah.
You still want to save some money.
Yeah, you just can't, like, push the irrigation button and walk away from it.
Right.
You need to monitor it.
And too much water does create, you know, it can lead to other problems. I mean, it can lead to disease issues. You can do physical damage to the grass trying to mow it when it's too wet and leaving tracks and tears and so forth. So, yes, when it's too wet, is not good either. So most lawns actually will respond even during dry stretches to every other day watering seems to work well. If it's really hot, we may need to just go ahead and add an extra day to, you know, hydrate it up. But don't overdo it. If the soil's actually soggy and wet, it's time to back down, or you're past that time to back down, actually.
And the same with mowing. It sounds like you got to have a balance between getting it short enough, but then also leaving it alone.
Yeah.
That's
giving it a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing hosting this show. I've learned that, you know, Mother Nature is going to do what it wants to do. And at the same time, be patient and kind of leave things alone sometimes and let them do their own work.
Absolutely. That's like, neglect goes a long way.
Okay. That's well put. All right. We are going to get to your phone calls next. The number is 314-436-7900. We also do have an 800 number. You have to dial one. That's 1-800-925-1120, as in 1120 a.m., 314-436-7900. We are going to take your calls, and Paul and Jeff will be answering them over the next hour and 45 minutes, so stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagout, joined this day by Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall from the Horstman Brothers, who have been doing landscaping in this area for 36 years. They take care of turf, landscape maintenance, and they're answering your questions this morning. And one of the questions we've already had is, what's going on with Mike Miller, the host of the show for 3 decades? Well, he is still on the mend. Tracy updated the GoFundMe page recently and said that after 4 surgeries on his arm, he is still in the process of getting situated elsewhere. And they are trying to figure out if there's more surgery required. On the GoFundMe page, I'm just looking at the money that's been raised. $13,702 to pay for their medical bills and other expenses they have to deal with, like mortgage and things. The goal is $13,800. So my challenge during this show would be to ask you if you can go to that GoFundMe page, and it is called Mike's Epilepsy. They are $100 short of the goal. So if you could help out in any way, it would be fantastic. Paul, you were telling me about meeting Mike many years ago.
Yeah, it was back in the early 90s. I was working on the estate, and he came to the estate for some consultation. And I'll never forget it because my brother and I, we were just getting started on the side. And he's like, oh, yeah, so you garden here, plus you've got your own little landscape company. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, well, what's your customer retention? And it was like, what? And I had no idea what he was talking about. Hadn't even thought about it. And it just got the wheels turning. You know, he was very intuitive, and he asked a lot of questions, and I'll never forget that.
That's great. I mean, he had an influence on your career and your livelihood.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Mike has had a lot of influence on a lot of people, and he's very beloved in the KMOX family and by the listeners of the show. So we are still wishing him well and hope he can return soon. All right, let's get to the phone calls. The number is 314-436-7900. Jim, you are up on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, sir. Thank you for filling in for Mike, and I've been praying for him. He's a very good person. I have a problem with moss on my retaining wall, and I bought a product from a store, and it seems like it kills it, but it likes to kill other things too. Is there anything I could mix up and spray myself?
Moss on a retaining wall, I mean, obviously, to grow moss, we need lots of moisture, and we need usually shade, you know, so it's probably going to be an ongoing problem. My experience is most people like to power wash it and use a bleach water solution doing so.
Vinegar.
Yeah, vinegar can work as well, absolutely.
It's in the shade, and like you say, the rock retains moisture. So maybe I could just put some, like, straight vinegar maybe into a dispenser and spray it on like that, or is that not good?
Yeah, or another thing you could consider is maybe there's problems on the backside of the wall, and so maybe it's water that's hanging up on the backside of the wall, and if you improve the drainage behind the wall, it might wick the water away, which would help the environment, you know, of growing moss. You know, so you're getting rid of the moisture coming through the wall. Might be another kind of a line of attack. But yeah, yeah, I would say a diluted vinegar, power washing, bleach, all those would help keep it away.
Okay, the retaining wall is about 5 foot high, so trying to keep the moisture out of the back of it, that's not possible. But I'll try putting some vinegar in the dispenser and just spraying it on like that, and then try to power wash it off.
On a moisture standpoint, is it an irrigated area? I mean, is it like you have irrigation heads running all the time? Could be maybe time to dial that back a little bit in that particular area if that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah, there is an irrigation system there, so... Hey, thank you for your time, and you guys stay safe, okay? Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate your call. That's a good question. Let's go to Steve. You are up next on the Garden Hotline with Paul and Jeff.
Yeah, I have a zoysia lawn, or had a zoysia lawn, and it really looked good until this spring, and it come back. Some places are good and green and thick. Some places it looks like the grass is dying. And a couple places, the grass went from grass down to bare dirt within 30 days. The grass that is there is sending out runners. They'll get about a foot long, but they are brown. It's like it keeps dying. I've put insecticides on, fungicides. My regular lawn guy sprays it with, you know, the fertilizer and stuff. And I don't know what's going on with it.
Well, it can be any number of things. In recent years, there's been lots of issues with zoysia. But insect problems have been really big, a lot of chinch bug activity. There's also a lot of wintertime fungal problems. And if you research this, with treating fungus and zoysia, you kind of got to think out of the box and actually treat it in the late fall and even over the winter time. could be part of the problem. Again, culturally, if it's, you know, too wet can be a problem for zoysia, but certainly too dry can be a problem as well. I do remember way back in 2012, it was here in St. Louis, you know, it was one of the first years where we had real bad heat, you know, and it was an extremely hot summer. A lot of people, like South St. Louis, they never thought they had to water their zoysia lawns, and they did. They just declined out at that time, and it's been a struggle for a lot of those people since then. But, you know, I will tell you, treating for the chinch bug would be key, also, like I said, thinking forward about doing some fungus control, especially in the dormant season with the zoysia.
Okay. I was also thinking about just spraying it all off and killing everything and reseeding with like the turf type fescue.
That's a prop. Could be a wise decision. You know, I mean, zoysia is not as easy to grow as a lot of people think, and it takes water and it takes food, and you have to fertilize it when it's hot in the middle of the summer, and most people don't, and most lawn companies don't think about that. So there's, you know, special issues, special concerns with it, no doubt. But you know, the killing it off thing, you know, sure, spray it, get it sprayed, or spray it in August or you know, early August and reseed it late August, early September, and hit it again in October, and you'll probably hit a home run, you know, as long as you keep that damp, you know, when you're
seeing. I've got an irrigation system, that helps a lot.
That would probably be my recommendation. I mean, trying to like resod it with zoysia, believe me, is extremely, I don't know how big the area is, but I mean, it gets very pricey. It's an expensive product.
I've done almost all this. Yeah. But I was at that house that you took care of that had the golf course.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
you did a good, you really did a nice job there. That was really something to see.
Oh.
There.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really nice. Well, thank you for the information.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks for the call. 314-436-7900. Up next, Barb, you are on the Garden Hotline.
Yes, two questions, need advice. I have Autumn Glory clematis that is covering about half of a Japanese maple that's about 10, 12 years old. I always tear it off at the end of the season. Will it hurt anything?
Shouldn't hurt a thing.
Okay, that's good.
I mean, what do you think, Jeff?
I don't think it's a problem since you're physically removing it every year. I mean, the only issue that I would see would be is if it got so thick that it actually, you know, covered the leaves up and eventually did damage.
Yeah, you'd want to keep it off the Japanese maple.
Right.
It's very invasive. Well, it's very invasive.
Right.
Gets places that I'm not counting on. Also, how much good is it to deadhead petunias and then that little bee, shape of a bee that's on the plant? What is that for?
I would deadhead petunias this time of year, cut them back, and then give them a good feeding. Something that would push the phosphorus, you know, so that would promote more blooming in late August. So give your
petunias. What do you say, cut them back?
Well,
pinched the dead head. I just pinched the bloom off when it's dead.
You could do that, or you could actually take a pair of hand pruners and actually reduce the size of the plant. You know, just really get in there and aggressively cut it back, and the plant will respond as long as you water and feed it.
Okay, what is that little bee-shaped thing that's on every stem?
I'm not visualizing that.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, my gosh, on petunias, all the petunias have... when you deadhead, there's still a little size of a bee on every stem.
Well, if you remove the flower, you know, the flower itself, it leaves the petiole of the old flower there where it was, you know. So like Paul's saying, if you got a lot of them, you can use a scissor shear or a hand pruner and just actually prune them back and then feed them and let them generate new growth, you know, and then you'll get your best blooms on that new growth.
I've got a lot of pots. Okay.
Yeah, they need a haircut.
I'll work on that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Barb, for the call. What exactly is deadheading?
Well, the flower fades, and so it's spent or brown or, you know, limp, and then you're removing that from the plant.
Got it. Okay, yeah. Just want to make sure everyone knows what that was.
That helps with both the physical appearance of the plant as well as it will help promote new flowers to form.
All right. That is Jeff Kendall, Paul Horstman, also here from Horstman Landscaping Services, and they are answering your questions, and we have a lot of phone calls to get to. We'll do that right after a short break. This is the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
What's happening with City SC? What's happening in the soccer world? Find out Tuesday night at 8. Jen Cease and Nate Gatter have everything you need to know. The St. Louis Soccer Report, Tuesday night at 8 on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
You are tuned in to the Garden Hotline live from Studio B, KMOX, downtown St. Louis. I'm Scott Jagow. Paul and Jeff are answering your questions. They are from the Horstman Brothers Landscaping Services for more than three decades, and they have a lot of expertise to advise you on your gardening questions at 314-436-7900. Next up, Nancy, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about transplanting a shrub from one area of my yard to another. Is there a certain time of year I can do that, or can I do that now?
Do you know what type of shrub it is?
I know. I knew you were going to ask. No, I don't recall. It's a beautiful golden yellow, and I planted it last fall, but I don't recall the name. And, of course, I threw away, you know, the little name of the shrub, but I don't recall.
Hey, Nancy, it's Jeff. The premier times to move any plants really would be spring or fall. And certain ones do favor spring over fall, but in general, in the cooler weather, much better odds of success moving it, you know. And if you choose to move it this time of year, whatever it is, I'm not saying it's impossible, but you are going to have to really, dig a bigger root ball around the plant than you think you need. And number two is you're going to really need to be diligent about the water, you know, because it's very stressful digging the plant up, especially in the middle of the summer.
I got it. Okay. I don't want to lose it. Well, the problem is I moved and I want to take it with me to my new house. So that's why. So, all right. That's great news. Thank you so much. Appreciate your service.
Thanks. Absolutely. Thank you.
Jeff, did you want to add anything on that idea of moving it to another location?
Oh, I just didn't know when Nancy was really moving. You know, if she can wait until even late August or September would be, just the closer you get to the fall time would be probably preferred. You know, like right now is tough.
Okay.
But what I would do is maybe reduce the canopy of the plant. I'd reduce the plant, you know, give it a nice pruning before moving, right?
Sure, Paul.
Get the plant in a nice big bucket, cut it back, and then keep it watered.
All right. Good advice. Up next, we have Robert. You're on the Garden Hotline with Jeff and Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm just wondering, is there some type of fungus in the air? Because I notice a lot of trees are dying off. There are some trees that have irrigation systems, and there's some that does not. And it's no particular species of tree, So my neighbor has an apple tree that was vibrant, healthy, and half of it is dying off. The neighbor across the street had a 25-foot pine tree. Just died off. And as I'm driving down 270, I noticed that, you know, there's multiple trees that look like they're just dying.
Well, Robert, I think the extensive amount of rain that we've experienced has really put some plants under stress. You know, another remnants of the cicada invasion, you know, has left a lot of trees scarred that you can see the brown, short brown outer perimeter branches and twigs. You know, that's cicada damage. Evergreens, I would say, is the extensive moisture. They don't like that. And fungus on apple trees from moisture. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, on that apple tree, it really could. It could be years of just topical surface type fungal diseases on the leaves, or it could even be a vascular type fungus that's coming up through the root, you know, and actually killing the whole woody tissue part of the trunk or the stems. It could even be there are some insects, you know, borers and different things that can do that kind of damage to the apple tree. Like Paul was saying, on the evergreens, there are specific fungal diseases that they can get, but in general, just we were talking earlier about just cultural things and moisture, and evergreen trees in particular just do not like excessive wet conditions. I mean, they really don't. So I think, you know, pines especially, they don't like our clay, limey soil to begin with. And then, you know, if it stays really wet, it just makes them more vulnerable to lots of problems. So.
Yeah, well, like I said, there's some commercial properties in Earth City, and they have trees planted along their building. And it's like every one of those trees, it was just one by one, slowly dying, and now they're all dead. So, and like I said, just going down 270, you see where trees are just, you know, it looks like it's dying from one side to the other. I thought maybe there was an ash borer or something in the air that's just killing trees off.
Well, a lot of those trees down in Earth City, you know, back in the day, everybody was green ash or Bradford pears.
Yep.
Everybody's planting Bradford pears, and those are susceptible to blight.
Yep. Yeah. We did also, this spring of a few weeks ago, just a lot of fire blight this year, and I mean, on some different types of plants as well, you know. So it's been, like Paul said originally when he first opened up about this, the weather, the moist spring we had, you know, has I think contributed to a lot of problems this year.
So. All right, those are interesting answers there. I learned a lot in the last 5 minutes. Thanks, Robert, for the call. Good question about the trees. We are going to continue with your phone calls. 314-436-7900. That's the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Back on the Garden Hotline, KMOX, the Voice of St. Louis. The voices you're hearing this morning are Paul and Jeff from Horstman Brothers Landscaping Services. They have been in the business for a long time, and they have a lot of knowledge, able to answer just about any question you might have. So let's get back to the phones. 314-436-7900. Mary, you're up next.
Hi. I have a lilac bush, and I had read on the internet that there was a bacteria, an airborne bacteria, kind of like the guy was talking about the trees. All the leaves are turning. I mean, the lilac bush is over 40 years old, but it still produces heavily every year. Is there anything I should do the leaves are almost all off of it right now.
Hmm.
Mary, did they start out with mildew, like white, or what? Did they just were brown?
Mm-hmm. They just brown, and they just are falling off. You know, there's barely any left.
Mm. What are the twigs doing? I mean, are the twigs dying as well, or are there buds left on the, you know, new buds forming on the stems? Or
no, they don't look like they're dying. I hadn't really looked that close. No, there's like green coming out of one or two of them that I'm looking at right now. So
yeah, so hopefully they probably had, or it probably caught some kind of fungus, you know, and it's, you know, going to drop a lot of leaves, you know, and it might be smart to have it sprayed or spray it with some kind of fungicide, you know, to try to disrupt that cycle. Would anytime a tree is defoliating like that too, I would encourage you to clean up the old leaves and, you know, reduce the odds of
contamination. Right.
You mean on the ground?
On the ground, yeah.
Just like we were saying, it's just kind of cultural practice. Just keep it clean, you know. Because
okay.
But if the twigs and the small branches look supple, and you can take your fingernail and scratch them, and it's bright green underneath the plant, the plant might make it. It's probably okay.
And I would also stress this in this case. I know we were talking about too much water, and we certainly don't want to overwater a lilac, but we don't want to let it get extremely dry either. You know, a few weeks ago, we went through a really dry, hot and dry stretch, which was very tough on things, you know. So I would encourage, you know, consider maybe spraying it with a fungicide. Probably don't have a lot to lose. And clean up the leaves that have fallen, and, you know, just make sure it has proper hydration the rest of summer, you know, so it doesn't get stressed out.
Yeah, and any limbs or branches that are dead, that are dry and dead, I would prune them out, because those are areas to harbor more disease or more insect.
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Mary. Let's go to Chris. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hey, good morning, gents. Thanks for taking my call. Praying for Mike and his family. You know, I'm thinking, hey, I lived in Maryland Heights many years ago, and I lived next door to a gentleman. I guess I'll call him the one of the zoysia gurus, for lack of a better term, because he had a total zoysia lawn, and he said, "Do you want one?" And I said, "Yeah." So he hands me a plugger, and I plugged out of his yard into mine, and I wound up with a total zoysia yard. Now, what would happen too is he'd get those dead spots, or we'd get those dead spots, and we would go out and really work them, you know, soften the ground and make sure everything was looking good, and then just take that plugger and put a couple, depending on the size of it, just put some plugs in there. I don't know if they still sell pluggers. I bought one or two a couple of years ago, so I think they're still out in the hardware store. But I found that to be a really effective way to save or restore that zoysia lawn if you want to keep it. And then dethatching was another key thing there, too, to, in the fall, I guess it was, or the spring, I can't remember for sure. I'd have to Google it. But you just dethatch them, and that gets rid of all that, whatever's falling. This gentleman bagged his clippings all the time just to avoid having to do as much dethatching. So those are just a couple ideas I had. Thanks.
Yeah. Chris, great advice. Plugging. Taking from healthy parts of the yard and moving that into weaker areas is excellent. I think another thing that's an easier cultural practice than dethatching is just aeration. Aeration, and what's unique about zoysia yards is you want to aerate around the 4th of July in the heat of the summer. That's when golf courses are doing it. But you want to get those little plugs up on top And as they break down, they'll release microbial activity that will feed on your thatch. So you actually get the microbes dethatching your lawn, which would save you a lot of labor. So just poke the living daylights out of it in July, and your yard is dethatched, and your zoysia is happier, and give it a good shot of food.
And why July?
Because that's when zoysia yards, warm season grasses, are actively growing. This is their prime time to shine, July, August, and even three quarters into September. And that's when you're going to mow the most. That's when you need to work with your zoysia to really get it healthy.
All right, that's Paul Horstman. We also have Jeff Kendall. They are with the Horstman Brothers Landscaping Service. Been doing it for many years. Lots of experience to answer your questions this morning on the Garden Hotline. We will continue with your phone calls after we have a top of the hour news break. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for joining us on KMOX.
Now, at your service, welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
As we said last hour, Mike is still on the mend. He has a GoFundMe page called Mike's Epilepsy, and they're getting close to their goal. This is to help with medical bills and mortgages and things like that. $13,700 raised, and the goal is $13,800. It is Mike's Epilepsy on GoFundMe. So if you are able to contribute anything, Tracy and Mike would be grateful for that. All right, our number is 314-436-7900. Our experts today, Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall, they are with Horstman Brothers. It's a team of landscape experts that have been doing it for many years. Jeff is 42 years in the business, and the Horstman Brothers are celebrating 36 years. So lots of experience to answer your questions this morning. Let's get to Carol. You're up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
I have a zoysia lawn, too, that's giving me problems. But the biggest one right now is I've got it infested with spurge. I've sprayed and sprayed, and I think it just fertilizes it. What can I put on that stuff? I mean, I've been pulling it like crazy while the ground is, is soft, but I don't know how to get rid of it.
Well, Carol, a couple things. One, spurge is impacted by early season pre-emergent. It helps reduce it because it comes by seeds. The other issue is you just got to spray it with a proper broadleaf herbicide, you know, to take care of.
Yeah, that's what I've used without a lot of success.
Yeah. Are you not getting any dieback at all, or it doesn't die back at all, and maybe you're just getting more plants that are germinating as it dies off, or?
Well, I don't know. Some of them look like, you know, they turn brown and obviously are dying, but it's just coming up everywhere, and I can't pull that much.
No. I mean, sounds to me like you you may just need to maybe seek some professional help with getting it sprayed, you know, and to take care of it. And like I said, also, like, again, we've been kind of stressing cultural things, you know, with spurge, like any broadleaf weed, it's opportunistic. How's the density of your actual grass? You know, is it a nice thick lawn, or is it coming up in a week? Yeah, is it coming up in the weak and thin areas? You know, that would be just telling us that maybe if we thicken those areas up, either with zoysia plugging we talked about earlier, or if it's in an area that's actually fescue or something, doing it by seed this fall. You know, that would help eliminate that problem.
It's pretty much everywhere.
It really. That's because usually you'll see that.
Areas.
Yeah. Usually you'll see that. You know, thin areas, edges of, you know, curb lines, edges. Those are areas you see it more prevalent. You know, beds. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think professional help, because, like, when we spray broadleaf weeds, we use a sticker with our spray that is a surface retention deleter of water. So it makes water wetter.
That's, And, is that possible?
So the chemical will cover the leaf of the plant nicer and more thoroughly. And so using a sticker with your herbicide is very important to get these tough weeds wetter so they uptake the herbicide better.
And this is something I can't buy on the market myself.
Well, you could use Dawn liquid soap, a couple, you know, like a teaspoon of Dawn in your little hand can sprayer. So if you're mixing so Dawn liquid soap is a surfactant that makes water wetter.
I've never heard that.
Okay. I'll try just about anything right now.
Yeah.
I would tell you, don't, you know, it is important to try to either, like you're saying, either physically pull it or spray it and kill it, because that's a seed producing machine. I mean, it just makes millions of seeds, you know, and so you just got to get a grip on it.
Well, I was late with the pre-emergent this year, so that's probably my biggest mistake. How early should I put that down next year?
March.
Okay.
Yeah, get it down early. And then you might have to do a second application end of June.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll mark my calendar. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, zoysia. A lot of questions about zoysia today. I guess it's that time of year.
Yeah, warm season.
All right. Well, that was Carol, and now we have Carol, a different Carol. You're on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Good morning. I have two questions. I have some bushes that need trimming, quince and euonymus. Is it too late to trim them?
I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay.
They both respond to pruning.
Okay. The other question I have, I have a gardenia plant, and it looks marvelous. It's getting all new leaves and everything, and I had it in the winter, and it got some buds, but then they fell off. What do I need to do, or what kind of, does it need a lot of sun, or it's kind of in partial sun, mostly shade now?
Don't jump in at once.
I don't think Paul or I are either one of us are gardenia experts.
I would say increase the light.
Yep.
And give it some food.
I did fertilize it at the beginning of the summer.
Okay.
And I used a fertilizer that was for rhododendrons and that kind of a acid. I thought that that's what it was supposed to get.
I would agree. Maybe another feeding. Because something that had, you know, on your fertilizer analysis, the middle number, which is your phosphorus, would be a larger number. So like maybe a 18, 24, 12, you know, something. Mm-hmm. So kind of push the phosphorus might help it to produce flower.
Okay. All right. It looks really good, but it's just not getting any buds.
Well, other times I've gotten in trouble from overfeeding. So if the plant is healthy and fat and happy, it's not going to produce flowers. So, you know, you're kind of walking a tightrope there. Maybe just try a little neglect and just keep watering it, and the blooms might come.
Okay. All right. And I'll put it in more sun.
Sounds good.
I help. Thanks.
All right. So I've learned that neglect can be a good word when it comes to gardening, right?
Right. Don't overfeed.
I did not know you could make water wetter. So I appreciate that tip. Okay. The number is 314-436-7900. We have folks from the Horstman Brothers Landscaping Services here. That's Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall. They are answering your questions, and we will continue with the phone calls in just a moment on KMOX's Garden Hotline.
KMOX, your go-to for family-friendly discussions of topics that matter to you. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Ah!
This is the Garden Hotline on this Saturday, July 13th. Good morning. I'm Scott Jagow. Happy to be joined today by our experts, Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall from the Horstman Brothers team. Been doing this for a long time in terms of landscape services, and they are answering your questions this morning. 314-436-7900. Let's go back to the phones. Doug has been waiting patiently. You're up next.
Yes, my question has to do with zoysia also. I need to know what kind of pre-emergence I would put down and when to put it down for, like, crabgrass and stuff that's getting into my zoysia.
Yeah, Doug, thanks for calling. You go ahead and do your pre-emergent early in the spring on a zoysia like any other lawn, and then you can give it a follow-up dose as well later in the summer. Depending on the product, they'll last 3 to 4 months, you know, in longevity.
And what kind of product would I use? I don't want to harm the zoysia.
Well, just...
I don't know.
You know, anything from your local hardware store. I don't know what it truly is called in the hardware store, but, you know, anything that would have the crabgrass pre-emergent in it should be fine.
Yeah. I mean, commercially or, you know, professionally, we have been using, like, a Barricade or the generic form of Barricade for several years. It works very well. There's other products out there as well, but for do it yourself, you know, just whatever brand your store carries should be fine. Just do read the label, of course, and follow the label, and realize that they don't last maybe as long as you think they might. And different conditions weaken them as well. You know, like extreme heavy rain, like we experienced this week. Definitely will shorten the longevity of the pre-emergent.
But so I just make sure that it says pre-emergence on whatever product I use.
Yeah.
For homeowner type use, they'll usually say, you know, some kind of fertilizer with crabgrass preventer or something. You know that.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
And then make sure you water it in. So apply your granular and then water it in, and that activates the chemical.
Okay, no problem. I'll try it. I can't let this crabgrass win, so I will give it a try.
Okay.
If you already have the crabgrass, though, the pre-emergent will not make that go away. You know, just realize that.
And I'll have to wait till spring, though, to put it down. So this year is more or less shot, correct?
Yeah. I mean, if you can physically remove the crabgrass, or if you could spot spray the crabgrass with, like, a Roundup type product, you know, that would help, you know, possibly get the crabgrass out of there, and your zoysia might be able to recover. You would have to be very careful when doing that.
Yep. Okay. I'll give it a whirl. I pull it by hand, and the zoysia is spreading, but it's running into the crabgrass, and they put up a retaining wall is what happened, and whatever they put out the fescue and stuff, and this crabgrass is just, I never had it there before. And once that retaining wall got put up where they disturbed everything, whatever they threw down, that crabgrass is just coming in like crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Doug, we appreciate your call and your attitude. Get that crabgrass. You can't let it win. All right. Up next, we have Bob on the Garden Hotline for Paul and Jeff.
Thank you for taking my call. Years ago, the city put in a new water meter, and when they backfilled, somehow they introduced something that you gentlemen probably know very well, and that's Bermuda grass. And I have been battling that ever since. I've done everything from taking in and completely nuking the entire area with Roundup, reseeding, and I still have the problem. There's a product I was using called Turflon Ester. Is there anything else that I can take and use to spray that to keep that under control?
Yes, Bob. There's several selective post-emergence on them, at least for available for commercial use. I'm not sure if they're available for homeowner use that can be treated, where we can treat the Bermuda throughout the active growing season. And like you had mentioned, the Roundup works great. Just obviously it will kill any other grass that's in there with the Bermuda, and you'll have to reseed it, you know. But either way is what you're going to have to do. And the Bermuda is definitely an increasing problem in our area. You know, it's probably driven by the changes in the weather a little bit that we're having, and it likes the hotter conditions, and I think we'll be facing that problem for a while.
It's really hard to get rid of. I mean,
yes, I know that is. Yeah. Like I says, yes, I've Roundup the entire area, killing off is at my fescue lawn, and I know the neighbors always ask, "Is that what the heck happened to your front lawn?" Now, like I says, I've been using Turflon ester. Is that something? Is that can keep it under control, or is there another product? Is that can be purchased, you know, that would actually do the same thing?
I'm not familiar with Turflon ester. Pylex.
Yeah. Pylex is the preferred selective post-emergent for warm season grasses and cool season grasses. Yes.
And that's Tylex?
Pylex with a P.
Pylex with a P.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob, for the call. Let's go to Roy, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hello. I have two questions. Is it too late? I see I'm getting fungus to put fungus killer out. And I have, I think they call it nuts edge. And is it too late to spray for that?
Good questions, Roy. You know, once you have fungus, you know, putting out the fungicide isn't going to really turn that brown area back to green, you know. And it could be that the grass is not actually dead, you know. But if it is, you'll have to probably do some seeding again in late August or early September. But it would be great to put out the fungicide to prevent the problem from spreading. You know, and reoccurring. Paul and I were discussing this morning. We haven't seen tons of fungus really yet this year, but I think this week we may actually start to see a lot of brown patch developing. It loves the hot days and warm nights, you know, and especially when the humidity's up. And it sounds like that's what we're going to be faced with here this week. So fungicide is certainly a prudent thing to do on the grass at this time. It's never too late to spray nuts edge. Just make sure you use a proper nuts edge control product.
And there's some tricks.
One other question I have. I have a lawn service and I have fescue, and they want to come out Monday and weed and feed, they said. Is that a good idea?
Well, I would hold off. I mean, 100-degree temperatures, putting down a herbicide, probably not the best idea. If you have an irrigated yard, I think...
I do.
Okay, well, then I would let the chemical dry on the leaf blade after their application, and then maybe give the yard a dose of water, you know, mid-afternoon to early evening, you know, just to kind of take the edge off of the heat.
Yeah, and Roy, it may depend, you know, when they say weed or you said weed and feed, it could be they're just going to apply some kind of summer fertilizer and spot treat weeds, you know, not spray
right,
the whole yard.
Right, that's what they do.
Yeah,
they said this is a slow-release fertilizer.
Yeah, sounds like they know what they're doing, and you'll probably be all right. But like what Paul was saying, the key thing is going to be watering that product, and, you know, just to keep that grass hydrated and healthy, and to actually activate the, you know, the fertilizer.
Okay.
You know, so
how often do you think I should run my sprinkler system? I run it 3 times a week now. I've got 7 stations. And I run it up each station about 40 minutes. Does that sound right?
Sounds like
pretty
a
close.
Good,
yeah.
Good plan. Okay. Sounds like a good plan. I mean, 40 minutes is sometimes that would be, could be a little, you know, on the heavy side, actually. But I don't know. We don't know how your system, how much water it really lays out, you know. So every other day is really good. And when it's above 95, you know, and daytime highs, you might want to add a fourth day. Just a manual. Just turn it on one of the off days. You know.
I would right. say at least 4 days.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, and a friend of mine has beautiful lawn. I mean, he's got pastures, beautiful green, but we call him the lawn doctor. And he told me if you got fungus, I've heard two different things. If you got fungus, you put fertilizer down, that fungus will spread like wildfire. He said, no, that helps it, actually. Is that true or false?
Okay, that's a great question, Roy, and that depends on the type of fungus, you know. So in the early summer or late spring, when we're seeing a lot of what we call dollar spot, and there's some other fungus. Actually, this year I saw even rust and different things. Early season fungus, you know, fertilizer is usually actually a good thing. The grass will grow out of it, and it's not a fatal disease down to the crown of the grass plant. What we were talking about just a little while ago, that if we get into this brown patch, though, that's a serious problem, and it can actually create dead spots in the lawn. And fertilizer, if it's active, fertilizer can actually make that
worse.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Good questions, Roy. We appreciate your call this morning. The number is 314-436-7900. And we're going to continue with your phone calls for Paul and Jeff this morning on the Garden Hotline on KMOX.
For everything St. Louis Cardinals, it's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
You're tuned in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall of Horstman Brothers. They've been in business for 36 years for good reason, taking care of people's lawns, turf care, and they are answering your questions this morning, 314-436-7900. Paul, did you want to follow up on the Bermuda question we had?
Well, when using Pilex, I was just texted by one of the sod growers in our area, and they are recommending the Pilex, 3 applications, 2 to 3 weeks apart, and then be sure to overseed in the fall. So his quote was, lawns don't get sick fast, thus they don't get fixed fast either.
Yes, that is a theme on this show. Patience. Okay, let's get back to the phones. Pat, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a limelight that is absolutely beautiful. Actually, it's a bush or a tree, but it's just beautiful. My problem is it's growing. It's right now it's in full bloom, and it's growing, and the limbs are some of them so bent that I have them elastic tied to keep them from breaking. How do I trim that tree or just leave it alone? Not tree, it's a bush. Leave it alone.
Sure. Pat, you can go ahead and trim that thing today if you want, but obviously you'll be cutting off a lot of the blooms. The trick to those limelights really, and they do, they get big and they get big fast. You need to trim them way back in the, especially even in the fall, you know, like just go ahead and trim them way back. So if the thing's 6 feet tall this year and you really only want it to get 4 feet tall next year, I'd be trimming it down to 2 feet tall and let it just grow. You know,
mine has got to be at 8 feet tall.
Yeah. No, they get big. The straight limelight gets, it's quite a large plant.
Time for a haircut.
Yep.
And how far back?
Yeah, so yeah, you can easily, even if you're, when it's, when those blooms are past peak and you're like, maybe it's time to go ahead and trim it, you can take it halfway back easy. It won't hurt it a bit. And then you could even give it another cut in fall and reduce it down to 2 or 3 feet. Like I said, they'll come back.
And if, okay, and if you're on vacation or you just don't get it done this fall, you can do it in February or March.
Yep.
But make sure you do it early. You know, you don't want the plant to get going. And then, so fall or early spring, early spring, give it a really good haircut.
Yeah, they set their buds for the bloom in the spring, you know. And so if you cut them in, you know, May, you're not going to obviously get blooms in July, like you're enjoying
okay.
today.
You know, so. One other quick grass. I'm in a community where we have, I guess, these grass cutters. I'm not sure that in the back of mine, the grass is not growing. In fact, it has browned. And I thought it would have to be because of the grass cutters and the heavy equipment they use back there.
Hmm.
Any HUDs to that? Those heavy, you
well,
know,
can you talk to your subdivision trustees and maybe get a message to the contractor that, you know, certain units, certain yards, you know, to stay off the backyards and just give the lawn a 2 to 3 week rest, but maybe go through your subdivision trustees because they have a direct line of communication with the contractor?
Well, that's been done, and where we have even draped it off with yellow tape to avoid it, but doesn't seem to work.
Hmm. Oh,
would it be anything to do with the tree that is halfway in the trade, halfway in the shade?
Meaning that
the tree limbs hang over one section, and they did tape off the entryway to it, but as soon as that's lifted, it continues, and they feel they want to cut back the tree or cut off the tree, and I don't want to do that.
Hmm.
So, I'm sorry, was your question that the... are you thinking the tree is impacting the grass that's not growing, or is this about the access that the mowing people have?
No, the tree grows fine, but there is grass under part of the tree.
Yeah, so the...
very narrow passageway.
Okay, and so, yeah, so it's a narrow passageway, and it's in shade, you know, from the tree probably, and plus... Yeah, it's, the equipment has to go through there, and, you know, that's a sensitive area. You know, growing grass under trees is kind of touchy, and, you know, it certainly, if it, you know, if they got to bring the equipment through there, and especially if it's wet or something, that maybe could be a problem. But the grass itself is probably thin and not growing much because it's shaded by the mm-hmm. tree, you know. Grass does, it likes sun, you know, and
yes, I know that.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Pat. We appreciate it. Mary, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Jeff and Paul.
Good morning. I have one question. I have a terrible problem with moles. What would be the best approach? I've tried the traps, but I just have trouble setting them.
I would recommend a professional. They have a experience identifying active runs, so it's very important that you set your trap on an active run and that the trap is set properly and in the right location and... you know, with attention to detail as far as human scent, you know, keeping the trap clean, and it's all about trap placement. So I would engage a professional, someone who's had experience identifying active runs.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree. Having dealt with moles in the past, that it's just like that game. There's a reason it's called whack-a-mole, because it is impossible to catch those things unless you have a professional that knows where to put the traps.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you are just chasing your tail.
Yeah, there is. It is an art. I mean, you really need experience of trial and error multiple times to identify the proper place to set the trap. Yeah.
All right. Good advice from Paul Horseman. We also have Jeff Kendall, both of the Horseman Brothers team, answering your questions this morning on the Garden Hotline. Your last chance to get in is coming up, so stay tuned. After a short break, we'll take some more phone calls. Stay with us.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Just want to give you a quick update that on the GoFundMe page, we had asked earlier if people wanted to donate to the GoFundMe page for Mike's Epilepsy. That's the name of it. And people have, and they have raised over the goal now during this show. So thank you if you were participating in that. We appreciate it. Mike is still on the mend, and we'll give you an update when we have more from Tracy on his condition. All right, Paul and Jeff are answering your questions this morning. They are with the Horseman Brothers, and Anne has been waiting patiently to ask her question. You're up next.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I didn't start listening till the second hour of the show, and I understand there were a lot of questions about zoysia. We have a older zoysia lawn, and in the back, I guess, last fall, I noticed a pretty sizable brown patch way in the back. And this spring, another one seemed to develop. And yeah, it seems like it's growing. And is zoysia decline the same as having a fungus? Is my question. And my other question is, do you guys come out and take a look at it? And give an opinion that I might have missed that earlier too.
And it's Jeff. Yeah, sure, we can come out and take a look at it. You could give Horseman Brothers a call Monday, and I'm sure we'll set up a time to take a look at it. But in general, the zoysia decline, which is a term that is used, that actually describes a dying off of the root system of the zoysia. And usually that gets going during the dormant season. And you know, then you see it the following spring. That can be, fungus, but it's related to conditions. You know, if wet areas are more prone to that problem, just kind of root rot and the roots dying off. That with the zoysia, we talked about this earlier, there's also a lot of insect problems to be wary of, chinch bug primarily. Grubs are always a possibility as well. We also talked about, if it's already the brown patch or, the spot is brown, you're going to have to physically do something to reestablish the grass. So, you want to get the dead grass out of that area and then plug in new pieces of zoysia and let it take back over.
Yeah. Do you know where to get that? Plugs? And you're saying maybe get it from the lawn that's good, but...
Yeah, you can plug from good zoysia that you have in the lawn or, I have seen plugs actually for sale at certain garden centers before. I haven't recently, and I haven't really looked for that. I know, like in our business, we can certainly buy zoysia sod, and we can either lay whole pieces of the sod or cut it up into smaller pieces and plug it in. Or we'd have to look at the situation to see what makes the most sense.
Okay, well, I will give your company a call on Monday and I mean, you can also look at a lawn and see if it's fungus.
Yeah. No, we should be able to get an idea of what is causing the problem. Yes.
Yes. I think it's the decline because it seemed to be fine in this fall, the one patch, and then now another is, yeah, developing.
Did the brown note just start, or was it that way this early this spring? You know, was it there
no.
and it just never greened up, or is it something new?
It started in the spring. I was like, why is that so brown?
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
And
so,
thinking, yeah.
It probably, declined or died over the winter season, and then it just didn't green up, you know, in May.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And we haven't aerated it for a while either, so.
Well, we talked about that earlier. I don't know if that was the first hour or second, but aeration and aerating in the middle of the summer, like now when it's hot, is definitely a good thing for the zoysia lawn.
Good thing? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ann, for your phone call. We're going to try to get another question in here for Jeff and Paul. Linda, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I know you guys recommended that the lady with the moles get a professional, but that is really expensive. We got a professional. It cost us like $150. That might have been cheap, actually. And all they did was set those spear traps like Mike, Miller used to recommend. And we have gotten some with that before on our own, but the professionals got nothing. So that was a year's worth. Our contract was for a year. So it's really pretty easy to do that on your own. I mean, all you have to do, you have to wear rubber gloves or some type of garden gloves so, the moles don't smell the human smell. But just, where you see a tunnel, and you can pretty well tell it's active because the dirt will be fresh, up above. Stick your finger down in there or a tool, like a garden tool, feel around in there, and you can feel it's not really deep. I know they go very deep, but their active runs are very shallow. You can feel it. And what we did is went to a True Value Hardware store. I'm sure any of those places have them. And got these little pellets in like a cone shape. It looks like an ice cream cone thing. Got these little poison pellets to put in the ground. And it even has like the point on it where you can stick it down, along the active run and just put a lot of them in. I've gotten rid of my neighbors, an older lady who, had them really bad. We don't have them here anymore. You just have to be persistent and, use, I would say, at least a couple of packages. They're only like $3.99 or maybe up to $5 per cone.
All right. Thank you, Mary, for that tip on the moles. Interesting. Paul, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today to answer questions. Horseman Brothers, been in business for 36 years. Keep it going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
For everything St. Louis Cardinals, it's Cardinals Conversations. Use the Odyssey app or hear it on your favorite podcast platform. From game analysis, player and management interviews, it's exclusive Cardinals content from KMOX Sports, where the Redbird talk never stops.
You're tuned in to the Garden Hotline on KMOX. I'm Scott Jagow, joined by Paul Horstman and Jeff Kendall of Horstman Brothers. They've been in business for 36 years for good reason, taking care of people's lawns, turf care, and they are answering your questions this morning, 314-436-7900. Paul, did you want to follow up on the Bermuda question we had?
Well, when using Pilex, I was just texted by one of the sod growers in our area, and they are recommending the Pilex. Three applications, 2 to 3 weeks apart, and then be sure to overseed in the fall. So his quote was, lawns don't get sick fast, thus they don't get fixed fast either.
Yes, that is a theme on this show. Patience. Okay, let's get back to the phones. Pat, you are up next on the Garden Hotline.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a limelight that is absolutely beautiful. Actually, it's a bush or a tree, but it's just beautiful. My problem is it's growing. It's right now it's in full bloom, and it's growing, and the limbs are some of them so bent that I have them elastic tied to keep them from breaking. How do I trim that tree or just leave it alone? Not tree, it's a bush. Leave it alone.
Sure. Sure, Pat, you can go, you know, you can go ahead and trim that thing today if you want, but obviously you'll be cutting off a lot of the blooms. The trick to those limelights, really, and they do, they get big and they get big fast. You need to trim them way back in the, especially even in the fall, you know, like just go ahead and trim them way back. So if the thing's 6 feet tall this year and you really only want it to get 4 feet tall next year, I'd be trimming it down to 2 feet tall and let it just grow. You know,
mine has got to be at 8 feet tall.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they get big. The straight limelight gets, it's quite a large plant. And, yeah.
Time for a haircut.
Yep.
And how far back?
Yeah. So,
I go?
Yeah, you can easily, even if you're, when those blooms are past peak and you're like, maybe it's time to go ahead and trim it, you can take it halfway back easy. It won't hurt it a bit. And then you could even give it another cut in fall and reduce it down to 2 or 3 feet. Like I said, they'll come back.
And if you're on vacation or you just don't get it done this fall, you can do it in February or March.
Yep.
But make sure you do it early. You know, you don't want the plant to get going. And then, so fall or early spring, give it a really good haircut.
Yeah, they set their buds for the bloom in the spring, you know. And so if you cut them in, you know, May, you're not going to obviously get blooms in July like you're enjoying today. You know,
so. One other quick grass. I'm in a community where we have, I guess, these grass cutters. I'm not sure that in the back of mine, the grass is not growing. In fact, it has browned. And I thought it would have to be because of the grass cutters and the heavy equipment they use back there. Any huds to that? Those heavy,
Can you talk to your subdivision trustees and maybe get a message to the contractor that, you know, certain units, certain yards, you know, to stay off the backyards and just give the lawn a 2 to 3 week rest, but maybe go through your subdivision trustees because they have a direct line of communication with the contractor?
Well, that's been done, and where we have even draped it off with yellow tape to avoid it, but it doesn't seem to work.
Hmm.
Oh, would it be anything to do with the tree that is halfway in the trade, halfway in the shade?
Meaning that
the tree limbs hang over one section. And they did tape off the entryway to it. But as soon as that's lifted, it continues, and they feel they want to cut back the tree or cut off the tree, and I don't want to do that.
Hmm.
So, I'm sorry, was your question that the... are you thinking the tree is impacting the grass that's not growing, or is this about the access that the mowing people have?
No, the tree grows fine, but there is grass under part of the tree.
Yeah, so the...
very narrow passageway.
Okay, and so, yeah, so it's a narrow passageway, and it's in shade, you know, from the tree probably, and plus... Yeah, it's, the equipment has to go through there, and, you know, that's a sensitive area. You know, growing grass under trees is kind of touchy, and, you know, it certainly, if they got to bring the equipment through there, and especially if it's wet or something, that maybe could could be a problem. But the grass itself is probably thin and not growing much because it's shaded by the mm-hmm. tree. You know, grass does, it likes sun. You know, and
yes, I know that. Yeah. I know that. Yeah. Well, okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Pat. We appreciate it. Mary, you're up next on the Garden Hotline with Jeff and Paul.
Good morning. I have one question. I have a terrible problem with moles. What would be the best approach? I've tried the traps, but I just have trouble setting them.
I would recommend a professional. They have a experience identifying active runs, so it's very important that you set your trap on an active run and that the trap is set properly and in the right location and, you know, with attention to detail as far as human scent, you know, keeping the trap clean. And it's all about trap placement. So I would engage a professional, someone who's had experience identifying active runs.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would agree. Having dealt with moles in the past, that it's just like that game. There's a reason it's called whack-a-mole, because it is impossible to catch those things unless you have a professional that knows where to put the traps. Yeah. Otherwise, you are just chasing your tail.
Yeah, there is. It is an art. I mean, you really need experience of trial and error multiple times to identify the proper place to set the trap. Yeah.
All right. Good advice from Paul Horseman. We also have Jeff Kendall, both of the Horseman Brothers team, answering your questions this morning on the Garden Hotline. Your last chance to get in is coming up, so stay tuned. After a short break, we'll take some more phone calls. Stay with us.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Just want to give you a quick update that on the GoFundMe page, we had asked earlier if people wanted to donate to the GoFundMe page for Mike's Epilepsy. That's the name of it. And people have. And they have raised over the goal now during this show. So thank you if you were participating in that. We appreciate it. Mike is still on the mend, and we'll give you an update when we have more from Tracy on his condition. All right, Paul and Jeff are answering your questions this morning. They are with the Horseman Brothers, and Ann has been waiting patiently to ask her question. You're up next.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I didn't start listening till the second hour of the show, and I understand there were a lot of questions about zoysia. We have a older zoysia lawn, and in the back, I guess, last fall, I noticed a pretty sizable brown patch way in the back. And this spring, another one seemed to develop. It seems like it's growing. And is zoysia decline the same as having a fungus? Is my question. And my other question is, do you guys come out and take a look at it? And give an opinion that I might have missed that earlier too.
And it's Jeff. Yeah, sure. We can come out and take a look at it. You can give Horseman Brothers a call Monday, and I'm sure we'll set up a time to take a look at it. But in general, the zoysia decline, which is a term that is used, that actually describes a dying off of the root system of the zoysia, and usually that gets going during the dormant season. And you know, then you see it the following spring. That can be fungus, but it's related to conditions. You know, if wet areas are more prone to that problem, just kind of root rot and the roots dying off. You know, that with the zoysia, we talked about this earlier, there's also a lot of insect problems to be wary of, chinch bug primarily. Grubs are always a possibility as well. we also talked about, you know, if it's already the brown patch or, you know, the spot is brown, you know, you're going to have to physically do something to reestablish the grass. So, you know, you want to get the dead grass out of that area and then plug in new pieces of zoysia and let it take back over.
Yeah. Do you know where to get that? Plugs? And you're saying maybe get it from the lawn that's good, but...
Yeah, you can plug from good zoysia that you have in the lawn, or, you know, I have seen plugs actually for sale at certain garden centers before. I haven't recently, and I haven't really looked for that. I know, like, in our business, we can certainly buy zoysia sod, and we can either lay whole pieces of the sod or cut it up into smaller pieces and plug it in. Or, you know, we'd have to look at the situation to see what makes the most sense.
Okay, well, I will give your company a call on Monday. And, I mean, you can also look at a lawn and see if it's fungus.
No, we should be able to get an idea of what is causing the problem, yes.
I think it's the decline because it seemed to be fine in this fall, the one patch, and then now another is, developing.
Did the brown note just start, or was it that way this early this, you know? Was it there and it just never greened up, or is it something new?
It started in the spring. I was like, why is that so brown?
It probably declined or died over the winter season, and then it just didn't green up, you know, in May. Right.
And we haven't aerated it for a while either. So
we talked about that earlier. I don't know if that was the first hour site, but aeration and aerating in the middle of the summer, like now when it's hot, is definitely a good thing for the zoysia lawn.
Good thing. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Ann, for your phone call. We're going to try to get another question in here for Jeff and Paul. Linda, you're on the Garden Hotline.
Hi. I know you guys recommended that the lady with the moles get a professional, but that is really expensive. We got a professional. It cost us like $150. That might have been cheap, actually. And all they did was set those spear traps like Mike, you know, Miller used to recommend. And we have gotten some with that before on our own, but the professionals got nothing. So that was a year's worth. Our contract was for a year. So it's really pretty easy to do that on your own. I mean, all you have to do, you have to wear rubber gloves or some type of garden gloves so, you know, the moles don't smell the human smell. But just, you know, where you see a tunnel and you can pretty well tell it's active because the dirt will be fresh, you know, up above. Stick your finger down in there or a tool, you know, like a garden tool, feel around in there and you can feel it's not really deep. I mean, I know they go very deep, but their active runs are very shallow. You can feel it. And what we did is went to a True Value Hardware Store. I'm sure any of those places have them. And got these little pellets in like a cone shape. It looks like an ice cream cone thing. Got these little poison pellets to put in the ground. And it even has like the point on it where you can stick it down, you know, along the active run and just put a lot of them in. I've gotten rid of my neighbors, an older lady who, you know, had them really bad. We don't have them here anymore. You just have to be persistent and, you know, use, I would say, at least a couple of packages. They're only like $3.99 or maybe up to $5 per cone.
All right. Thank you, Mary, for that tip on the moles. Interesting. Paul, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today to answer questions. Horseman Brothers, been in business for 36 years. Keep it going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.